This is Lizzie and Justin, and this is Telling Towards Life. It's Sunday morning, and we are here with another source chosen by Justin. It's a sunny morning here in London, and I can feel the restorative necessity of being together this morning. And really glad, Justin, that you brought this really beautiful connecting source for us all to dive into together. Maybe you're joining through a podcast, or you're watching live on Facebook, or you might be watching this, I don't know, in 2027 or something. You're very, very welcome. Or maybe you're watching in, I don't know, different forward time, but that's not possible. We are here for every week. And how many things have we done now, Justin? We're like 5 and a bit years or something.
Yeah, 268 or something like that.
268 times we've sat here together. So this is a what we call a very regular practice. And it's so wonderful that we do it, Justin, no matter what happens in our lives. And so everybody is also very, very welcome to do it with us, obviously, to be here. And thank you, Justin, again, for always showing up, and that we do this every Sunday.
It's so good to be here, Lizzie, and I'm always is. And I've been thinking about that a lot, what it is to have a practice where we commit to it being good to be here, which is something different to forcing it to be a particular way or showing up and pretending. It's more like finding something that nourishes, I know that nourishes both of us, that is also a gift to other people too. And I know it's my wish that this is both a kind of nourishment and a kind of joy, and it's also a kind of work, in the sense that we pour effort and attention and presence into this, and it nourishes us in return and is useful to so many people. And I notice my longing that it's my wish that the work that so many of us do in the world gets to be that way. And what kind of world would it be if we could build our work so that it nourished those who were working and those who were the beneficiaries of the work? So I'm glad that this is one form of this where all of that happens at the same time. And I'm thinking today also about how this practice that we're in isn't just you and me, how it comes from third space, and how third space is a group, a collective, a partnership, a community. There's lots of different ways of speaking about it, who are in turn dedicated to being deeply nourished in service of the nourishment and aliveness of others through coaching and teaching and, you know, all writing, all kinds of things. So I'm glad that this is not just you and me, Lizzie, in this practice, but there are circles upon circles. There's us in third space and all the people third space is bringing itself to, and then all the people who listen who are included in this big circle. So welcome. We want to welcome all of us. And this source, so you can always find the source on Facebook, on our turningtowards.life website, in the show notes for the podcast and all of that, is from a series of books that I have come to love by Bradley Shavit Artson. And we've read one of his pieces before, but a long time ago. So here it is. It's called The Shimmering Waves of an Endless Sea. Death loses some of its sting if our more modest sense of self displaces the arrogant illusion of being essential. I do indeed need the world and living creatures, but they do not need me, at least not forever. I need creation as the garden in which to exult, grow, play, work, struggle, learn, and sing. As part of creation, there's a sense in which creation needs me, but only to the degree that I am a willing participant of that creation, an expression of its vitality and a partner in its process. Once I separate myself from the world, once I sever my embeddedness in creation, then I set myself up against it, and creation no longer needs me. I make myself an alien, requiring the reinforcement of concrete and the glitter of acquisitions to hold my delusions in place. An embodied emergent vision of the world as a process allows us to transcend our crippling fear of death and our deadly alienation from the rest of creation. We are a part of the world, not apart from it. And our lives join the shimmering waves of an endless sea. We flow from it and return to it. And we leave a mark precisely to the degree that the sea continues unimpeded on its way.
Thank you, Justin. Death loses some of its sting if our more modest sense of self displaces the arrogant illusion of being essential. I do indeed need the world and living creatures, but they do not need me, or at least not forever. I need creation as the garden in which to exult, grow, play, work, struggle, learn, and sing. As part of creation, there is a sense in which creation needs me, but only to the degree that I'm a willing participant of that creation, an expression of its vitality, and a partner in its process. Once I separate myself from the world, once I sever my embeddedness in creation, then I set myself up against it and creation no longer needs me. I make myself an alien, requiring the reinforcement of concrete and the glitter of acquisitions to hold my delusions in place. An embodied emergent vision of the world as a process allows us to transcend our crippling fear of death and our deadly alienation from the rest of creation. We are part of the world, not apart from it, and our lives join the shimmering waves of an endless sea. We flow from it and return to it, and we leave a mark precisely to the degree that the sea continues unimpeded on its way.
Thank you, Lizzie. There's so much in here and so many places to begin. I suppose one of the reasons I brought this was that what Bradley Shavit Artson is, one thing that he's doing here in this writing is making a very powerful invitation, which goes squarely against something that we're often taught by our culture about what it is to be alive that gets us in trouble, that makes difficulty for us and for the creation that's around us, which goes something like, you're separate from life and separate from the world, and our job is to be in control of it all. And the mark of living a good life is that you get to separate yourself from the world and be in control and have everything turn out exactly the way that you want it. And I know certainly, Lizzie, it's such a frequent conversation in the kinds of conversations we get into in thinking about and talking about and teaching coaching. The idea that the mark of a good human life, assuming that you are afforded the dignity and the sufficient power in the world and whatever it is to leave a legacy that will last long beyond you. That somehow this sense that what my job is to be so big in the world that even when I'm gone, I will have made my mark in a way that endures and endures and endures and endures and endures. And it seems to me that what this does is it reminds us, it's not that there aren't really important legacies that are left by people that endure. It's not that, but that our first kind of care for ourselves and for our lives is to participate in the flow of life and not get in its way, which is a whole different place to look. So I found it so, I'm going to say useful, but I want to also say moving, to see if I can adopt as a daily practice a commitment to be a part of the world and not apart from it, and to be one who whatever mark I make precisely because I didn't get in the way of the sea flowing. And when I start to think like that, I can see all kinds of ways in which I get in the way of the sea flowing, like so many ways. When I get myself contracted with fear so that I can't move, or when I have expectations of myself or other people that are way out of scale with what's possible, or when my own self-critical parts jump on me because I didn't manage to plan my diary for the next week in a way that would work and something got left out, and I expect myself to be, you know, godlike and omniscient, and like there are so many ways in which I can stop being a participant in the world. And I feel like in a way that's what I've been taught by one stream all the way through my life, is to not be a participant in the world, is to stand apart from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like our education system often teaches us that. So I'm really wondering, as we begin this conversation, sort of noticing the places and the times where I do exult, grow, play, work, struggle, learn, and sing by being a participant, not by being an outsider in the life, the one life that is flowing through me. And of course, that happens too.
So in the reading of this and listening to you, Justin, I feel really like part of me feels like really undone by it. Part of me feels a bit like clingy, like, no, you can't take away the fact that I have to do something here and it needs to have some impact and, you know, all of that kind of thing. And yeah, I feel like this is a kind of, for me, you're talking about humility, like participating humbly in life. And whilst there's this really undoing feeling of the measure of my success is marked precisely to the degree that the sea continues unimpeded, like that's such a different definition of success than any I have been commonly given. And yet the bit that sits right next to that for me is that creation needs me to the degree that I'm a willing participant of that creation. And that if I can be an expression of its vitality and a partner in the process, then there's a need for me. It's like, it's like new ground that's like a combination of things, like being humble and fully participating at the same time. And when I say fully participating, it helps me internally have a boundary about which things I'm up to that are fully participating and which things I'm up to that are actually the thing you were talking about, that are kind of clinging to an identity, building a life that's got defenses inside of it and seems quite small and fearful. And so somehow this distinction around, am I being an expression of the vitality of this creation in this action or not? I feel like a sudden boundary inside of me coming along of like, oh, hold on. Maybe this is a means to choose the conversations I want to be in, to choose the people I want to spend time with, to choose the actions that I want to take, even like on an internal level as well. Like, is this an argument I want to have? Is this something I want to participate in? Is this about expressing vitality? Or is this just bolstering my corner somehow, making me feel like I'm right about something, fighting to the point of me feeling more assured in my position? Or am I an expression of vitality? And am I partnering in the process of creation? It just feels like a whole new kind of, I don't know, orientation to what to do next is here, both kind of on an inner level as well as an outer level. So, you know, you said like the times when you're, I think you said you were kind of stopped by fear or like frozen by fear or something. I can feel even in those moments for me, this might just afford one of those choice points. Like, what is this serving? What is it serving if I stay right here? And many times it's the process itself that has to unfold, of course, but I know lots of places as well where I'm kind of hanging on for longer than I need to things. And so to be able to ask this question at a point where I'm, you know, not in the midst of some flow of processing, but actually I'm a bit entrenched in something or hanging on for dear life to some point of view, to ask this question of whether I'm being an expression of the vitality of creation or not, somehow feels really helpful right now.
Really, really appreciating that question. And I can imagine taking it on as a practice, like a way of observing myself in the middle of things. To what extent is the way I'm bringing myself an expression of life's vitality coming through? And to what extent am I impeding it? Am I the dam or the block or the constraint? That, your way of talking about it, first of all, feels enormously practical. And it relates back a couple of weeks ago. We had a brief conversation about conversations that die in the middle, about whether we can notice whether a conversation has died in the middle. And it's reminding me of that. Sometimes conversations between people die, but they still go on.
Yeah.
And at that point, we're trying to control something or squish something, or, you know, let's not have this conversation be anything actually real, but we'll pretend. So we'll separate ourselves from the flow of life. And your question gets right into the heart of it. And I think it seems to me it's really important, because it's not as if there would be a way of reading this piece from Bradley Charlotte Artson and reading it as, well, what this means is, in order to be for the sea that is life to continue unimpeded on its way, I just have to get out of it, stop doing it, step aside, because then the sea will continue. But that would be the same thing. The process of life gets to continue precisely because we participate in it, not because we separate ourselves from it and absolve ourselves from any part in it, but also not because we try to cling onto it and force it and make ourselves bigger than we should be. And one of the things I love about your question is, it seems to me, is it gives a sort of a body-centered, heart-centered way, a felt way into the question, because I don't think it's that hard if we pay attention for us to feel whether the way that we're in the midst of something is a life-giving way, a life-flowing way or not. You have to start to pay attention to all the muscle groups that contract, or a feeling of hollowness in my heart, or a way, you know, or a way that I feel like I'm defending against something. I can feel those. I don't have to overanalyze it. With your question, I don't have to step outside my life, which would be exactly the thing that he's warning us about. Try to examine my life from the outside in order to make some kind of assessment about whether I'm a participant in life or not. No, right in the middle of my life, right in the middle of talking to you now, I can feel how alive this feels and how real this feels to be with you, and how all in I am, how committed I am, and how willing I am to let things emerge and to discover in my speaking, because I have no idea what my next sentence is going to be now or ever, and to trust you and to trust everyone who's with us. I can really feel that. I know what that feels like. And I also know the times when that's not what I'm up to. It's not so hard to learn where to look. And I suppose I could learn, yes, it seems true, that I can keep on looking with more and more discernment and more courage to all the places where I've stepped out of being a participant, and to imagine what it would take to let go of my holding on enough to really participate. I could keep on asking that question. I feel very willing to ask that question. And then when I'm frozen, you know, common pattern for me is some part of me tuning out in order to keep myself safe. And instead of trying to overcome that or just ignoring it or something, your question on this text also gives me a way to go, what would it be to allow that frozen part to come to life here? What would it be to allow that part of me that's really trying to step out of the flow of things to be welcomed back in? I don't have to force myself then to be a participant. I can allow myself to really take up my place in this life.
So interesting, Justin. I'm just kind of, where it's taking me is like kind of rewatching myself in certain pieces of life. And in a way, like, you know, over the years, I guess with the kind of things we've been interested in, Justin, and the inner undoings that have happened and the kind of identification of personality gifts and distortions for these past years, in a way, I can suddenly see some more language for why that's so important, that work inside of ourselves is so important to do. You know, where we see our patterns and we see our, the ways that we defend and the ways that we don't serve this flow, the ways we get stuck, the ways we fight, the ways we suffer. In somehow, in kind of examining them and becoming aware of them and practicing intentionally to be in life in a deeper way, that they don't have to cling on so hard, those parts. I feel like it's all in service of this kind of freedom to walk around unimpeded by one's, I don't know what you call it, bad behavior. You know, like to wander around without my, you know, just one small dynamic is like the grass is greener dynamic playing out, like everyone else has got a better life than me, you know, wandering around without that thing weighing me down in every conversation, in every interaction, in every way I see the world, is such a gift. Like to be able to see that and work with it and then let that part go in a way, like not let it be center stage in my life, leaves me much more able to be an expression of vitality in the world and to be in contact with people without putting them separate to me by thinking that they're better than me or something like that. But actually meeting people properly so that I can actually participate as a vital piece of life. It seems like somehow this is articulating why this development work that we're up to is so important, because it brings about this possibility of being this willing participant. Because wandering around with all that stuff going on is so debilitating. It's so difficult to participate fully when all that's happening is some kind of inner critic or woundedness or fearfulness or imagining people are thinking things about you or whatever, all of the things that seem to happen as human beings. It seems kind of infinitely possible in this moment that we can work through all of that, and that the luxury that's afforded to us at each stage is like a deepening of our expression of this vitality, which is open and free and willing and wide-eyed and participative and curious and open to life somehow. So I'm suddenly feeling really grateful for all of the things that I've shed. And of course, there's 1,000 more million things to shed. But the things that have been shedded allow me to walk up and ask somebody what their puppy's name is because Vespa's interested in them. And I don't feel like I have to analyze that or worry about it, or but just be in contact with someone and participate. So I'm feeling really grateful, and I don't know, somehow like a different, a more nuanced narrative of why do the work? Why go through the painstaking ridiculousness of kind of knowing oneself fully? Because this is possible.
Yes. What occurred to me was that the work on our own development, which is both inner and outer, you talked about shedding. And I understand the language of shedding, like what we let go of that we've held on to. And it also seems to me that what it is at heart is inclusion. That
mm-hmm.
the very understandable something that our adaptive selves do as we learn to be in the world and to get along in the world, whatever family systems and cultural systems and everything that we've been born into, the way that we adapt to be in those systems is that we, those communities, those cultures, those families, their relationships, everything, is we learn to separate ourselves from parts of ourselves, to push parts away. And so a lot of the time the way that we are not participating in the flow of the shimmering sea is starts inside, in the way that we're not participating in that flow within us, because we've by necessity had to make all of these separations inside us. And so the work of learning to include, like to recognize and include, to find a home for example, the part of me that is frightened about making a mistake when I'm speaking to other people and feeling embarrassed, that I can learn to include that part and welcome it so it can take up its place, so it can feel at home inside me and not be frightened in the way that it has been, and then can play its part. So this came to me really strongly, that the attending to our own development and to one another's development, our flourishing, our unfolding, is in large part the work of including and unimpeding what's inside us that we've learnt to impede in order to, in that motion towards becoming an adult in our culture, and that our culture, for many of us, doesn't help with that at all.
Yeah.
It provides no path for that kind of inclusion and that kind of undoing of inner boundaredness and separation. And now, because of what you said, I can feel how, just to take up Bradley Artson's words, that to be a part of the world and not apart from it, and to join the shimmering waves of an endless sea, starts with allowing all that is inside me to itself be the shimmering waves of the endless sea. And it includes how I also play my part in life. And that I guess for some people, it must be that they wake up one morning and all of the inner separations and boundaries have dissolved. But I think for most of us, it's an absolute ton of attention and work and care and practice and letting go and being supported, and it's work that really matters. And like you said, that is work that we've got ourselves really dedicated to. So you're reminding me that is not some optional triviality, but a really deep, heartfelt commitment to take on, to live fully in life, is to walk the path of taking up our places.
I love that you said it like that, Justin, as well, because I feel like in order to shed something, we have to turn towards it, which is the work. You know, it's not like I have been able to shed my self-consciousness by just deciding that it should disappear. And in a way, that's what I mean by the hard work. It's like, it's really hard to include things in our awareness and admit that that's what we're doing. It's really hard to say to myself, yeah, I'm pretty much obsessed with other people's lives. I think I need to look at that and then find the parts of me that in some way need to be turned towards in order that I can understand that more. And only when I can understand it more, can I make any decisions about it or give it permission to, as you said, have a home somewhere, or it might want to go away from me. It might want to fly away. And I've been hanging on to it because it protects me somehow. And it really matters to have a really, really solid for the sake of what in that, like, why am I doing this? Because it's not easy. It's not, you know, the amount of times that I've, you know, being in this world in this way where building a life of awareness and wondering and curiosity and processing and lots of facing of things, I often think, why can't I just go back to, like, I don't know, thinking about shoes or something, or discussing handbags or something like that. You know, it was easier then. You know, there wasn't all this complexity and layers of truthfulness that I have to navigate. And so I do need a strong reason to continue. And I know that I don't really have any choice, but, like, it really matters to furnish my world with this kind of beautiful reason to keep looking, to keep wondering, to keep owning things, to keep saying, oh, look at that, let me see again, let me wonder, let me examine the way I'm being defensive right now, let me examine the way I'm pushing you away, let me find a way of including the part that I think is really not a good part to be here or to ever be welcomed. But having a strong reason that makes me go, well, okay, I'm willing. But it's not only having a strong reason, it's being with people too. So, you know, being with you today gives me the kind of faith that it's possible, and also the kind of ballast that I need to do something, to build some more awareness in, or to admit something, or to be honest, really honest with myself about something. And somehow the way that this also supports is that I think this is speaking about, like, a depth of identity that's really supportive to the work, and a depth of identity that comes from the work, but also that underpins it as well. Like, I'm willing to believe, Bradley, that this is the nature of who we are. I'm willing to believe that there's a shimmering sea that must continue unimpeded on its way, whether or not I participate in a humble way, a modest way, as he says, or not. This is what we are. We're here for a time. We participate for a time, and then our time is up. And it really matters to me to have that articulation of our identity, to also give me the faith to let go of things and say, okay, I'm willing to not cling on to that so hard, because something way bigger is at stake than me being right, which is this shimmering sea.
A wonderful place to end, Lizzie. I want to just paraphrase you to end, which is to say, to ask the question, what becomes possible when we allow ourselves to know ourselves as this deeper identity of the shimmering waves of an endless sea? If we let ourselves trust that we are that, and how much we need one another for that. Yeah. Well, thank you, Lizzie, for a really beautiful conversation to be in. I'm going to head out into my day with this question about, is the way I'm participating a way that impedes or aliveness, or is aliveness?
Yeah.
It's another way of saying the question that you raised. And Thank you for always being so courageous and heartfelt and wise in our conversations and in our friendship and in our wider system and circles. And thank you, everyone, all of you who are with us. One of the things that I'm finding very exciting is that there are people keeping on finding their way to us. So if you are someone who has found your way to us and you want to share this with other people, you can send them to our turningtowards.life website or tell them about the podcast or sign up for the emails, which you can do on our website. There's lots and lots of different ways, but we would be so grateful if you shared this and other people could benefit. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Justin. Bye, everyone. Bye.